everyone. Thanks for joining us for another episode of LID Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Francesca. And for this episode, we're talking to Kate Usher, author of Your Second Phase, Reclaiming Work and Relationships During and After Menopause. So Kate Usher is a highly experienced menopause and relationships coach, working with women on the successful creation, development and growth of personal and career relationships during this period of intense and unpredictable change. She combines her extensive experience as a corporate change leader and her own menopausal journey to deliver a uniquely positive approach. So in Kate's book, Your Second Phase, she explores the best ways to cope with menopause changes, how to manage new and existing relationships, and how to manage your future, all in an educational, accessible, and very entertaining way. So Kate, let's dive right in. You've talked about this in the book and in subsequent interviews you've done, but I think it's important to hear what your menopausal story was and what led you to write the book. So can you please share?
Yeah, sure. Firstly, hi, Francesca.
Hi.
Well, essentially, at the age of 46, just after my birthday, I was woken up one night by an incredibly intense heat to the point at which I thought I was going to self-combust. Yeah. And pretty much that was the start of my menopause, was a high to a night sweat. And it carried on from there, essentially. And I collected various symptoms along the way. So I had hot flushes, night sweats, I had anxiety, depression. I went from being a very, very sociable person, very gregarious, to being someone who could barely get outside the front door in the morning. I was agoraphobic, I'd lost all confidence in myself and socially. And after about 6 months of this, my best friend came round and literally dragged me from the house and said, no, 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 you're coming out with me. And she took me to her flat, sat me at her dining table and fed me tea while I cried and told her all of my menopausal woes. And she essentially said I hadn't realised it had got this bad. And she collected me up. And she took me to the local pharmacy and filled my wire basket with loads of vitamins and minerals. And she's a public health expert. Okay. And she told me what each one would do. But in that single act of friendship and kindness and love, in that moment, I realized that not only were relationships critically important at this time, but also that whilst I may not be able to control my symptoms, I could certainly control what I did next and how I responded to them. And that was a real changing point in my menopause. And it goes on. I mean, your menopause doesn't stop. It goes on and on. It, for some women, it goes on for over 10 years. And you experience varying symptoms at varying intensities. So my hot flushes, for instance, not every woman has them. Of the women who have symptoms, only 79% have hot flushes, so you may never have one. Of my hot flushes, I would sit there, I'd look like I'd just run a marathon, my face was bright red, I would literally be doused in sweat, and I felt so mortally embarrassed. I had to kind of explain away what was going on or just try to gloss over it. And there came a point where I just thought to myself, I either allow this to utterly consume me or I stand up and start to talk about it and say what it is. I literally had that much of a binary choice. Right. And I decided to start talking about it. And that's pretty much where everything changed for me. Those sort of two instances drove me to start think about the book.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things that I guess, as you did, your friend hadn't realised how bad it gotten because people don't really talk about it. And it's that embarrassment factor, I think, that it runs through your book. And I guess it's kind of like the catalyst for change in that sense as well.
Very much so. it's really difficult because we often arrive at this phase in our life without any information. We don't know what's going to befall us. We don't really know about the menopause. We don't know how it will affect us. We don't know what the symptoms are. And quite often women are horrified when I tell them that there are 40 symptoms that I'm aware of. And, you know, they think it's going to last for 6 months, a year. They'll have one or two problems and then that'll be it. And they may. To be honest, that may be it. But for the majority of women, that is not the case. That's not the case at all. And we are learning as we go, essentially, how to manage this phase of life. Mm,
definitely. I think when your book was presented to me for the first time, sort of when it was just a concept, I began to think, actually, I don't know anything about menopause. I mean, the only symptom I'd ever heard was the hot flushes, and that's kind of the one we always go to. But it really kind of took me back, actually, that I hadn't been told anything about it, like whether it's in school or from my mum or any relatives or friends. Like, there just wasn't any kind of conversation, or I was so shocked about how little I knew. Now I've read the book, finally kind of have that understanding of it. But I do want to get back into the book. I mean, it's split into five sections. So what is menopause? You, your work, personal, and kind of the new area of you. And the first section is kind of very educational. It outlines things like the facts and figures, duration, symptoms and severity. And as someone, as I said, who's never taught about menopause, in school, so I mean, I didn't hear about it afterwards either. It was incredibly informative for me. So this is where kind of my first question comes from. Why is there such a lack of education about menopause, and how does this relate to the purpose behind your book?
Well, culturally, we have essentially not talked about menopause, as you say. It's not a subject that we have felt comfortable talking about. It's something that has been something that only women should talk about, apparently, in the shadows and then only in whispers. Mm. It's not a conversation that's had at the kitchen table or generally over a glass of wine with your mates or a cup of tea with your mum. Yeah. It's none of those things. And some of that is because it's only a couple of generations ago that we started to survive the menopause as en masse. Probably my grandmother's generation were the first generation to do that. Yeah. So it's a modern phenomena in the sense that most of us, virtually all of us, survive it. And it's been seen as very much a female thing and an embarrassing thing because it's considered an end of our usefulness as being able to produce children. And therefore, it's almost a little bit unclean in that, oh God, I don't want to talk about that. That's not very nice at all. And that's not the case. I mean, goodness me, certainly not. So it's something that we have very much felt uncomfortable about discussing, uncomfortable about having a conversation openly with. And that's amongst women. So imagine what that's like amongst partners, so men, if you have a male partner or your male friends or your brother or your father or your uncles or people that you work with, yeah. It's something that certainly is not discussed with men. And because of that, it's been kept incredibly insular, and that's not sustainable, essentially.
No. And actually, talking about sort of relationships and the way we talk about it with people around us, there are sections about relationships, sort of the work relationships you have and the personal relationships, and they're quite interesting to me. The book is all about the people around you and maintaining those relationships during these changes, whether they're colleagues or your family or, as you said, your partner. And you say that the book is equally important for them to be reading and understanding as the women that are actually going through the changes. So if we start with personal relationships, why do you think it's important for those around you to be as aware of what's happening to you as you knowing yourself in terms of the changes you're going through? And how do you have those conversations and sort of manage and navigate those relationships?
Well, firstly, as we've just said, that women don't know very much about this. So they arrive at this phase of life uninformed and ill-equipped to deal with this. So if that's the case for women, then it's doubly difficult for men if your partner is a man. There is another part to this, and that is that the symptoms, you can have one, you can have many. They can be severe, they can be mildly irritating, and they can go on for 4 years, 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, 12 years. Mm-hmm. And if you put it into the context of all of that, then it's a powder keg, essentially, because it's very, very attritional. It doesn't stop. Menopausal symptoms don't take a day off. They don't take a night off. They don't go on holiday. They are there day in, day out. Yeah. And literally overnight, a woman can suddenly become completely different. The way that she interacts with people, the way that she relates to people, the way that she communicates with people, and that can change in a heartbeat. So women quite often report that they swing from tears to anger very, very quickly, and then they can't understand why that's the case. So if you're on the receiving end of that, that's even more confusing. So it's critically important for the survival of relationships that you have conversations around it. It's conversation is key in all of this. It's the starting point, it's the middle point, it's the end point. And it's not a one-off activity. It's something that needs to be done again and again and again, because your menopausal symptoms will keep changing as you go through this. So it's about understanding that, yes, your symptoms are not your choice. This is not how you would choose to be. So what are your symptoms? How do they show up? When do they show up? And what's the impact of them? And then once you've done that, and the important thing when you're going through that is not to take this as an opportunity to feel really bad about yourself, because women do, they feel tremendous guilt, they feel tremendous anguish. I know I did. And anxiety over what this could actually be doing to their significant relationship and to the relationship with their children. It's a time to say, okay, let's look at this as an adult and say, these are my symptoms. This is how they show up, when they show up, but this is the help that I need. I'm going to say, going to make myself be vulnerable at this moment and say, look, I'm really sorry, I'm behaving unusually. And this is what we can do together in order to help get this situation through. And it is a case of sitting down and having that conversation and asking the other person for help and saying, you know, I am behaving unusually, and this isn't going to end in, you know, a month or a week or a year. We're going to work through this together. This relationship is really important to me, and I need your help. Yeah. And one of the things when you're asking for help is you've got to make it easy to do. If someone's got to metaphorically climb a mountain and fight bears in order to help you, then realistically they're going to do that once. They might do it twice, but they're unlikely to do it three times. And if you think this is going on for 10 years and you might need that help three times in a day, it's not going to happen. So you need to have small parcels of help that they can feel that they can deliver easily and that you can feel the benefit of. And what that will do is it will draw you together. So you are approaching this as a team of two. You are doing this together. This is not just you on your own. This is the both of you. Because at the other end of this, you have the potential to be something quite extraordinary as a couple. And it is about talking about it. It's about being open about it. It's about saying, you know, you really upset me when you said da, 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 or you did whatever it is. But I'd like us to move beyond that. And if you survive this, and many, many couples do, it is, you will become something quite amazing. And it's to keep that in mind when you do. And that, I mean, that's with your significant relationship. And I'd just like to say, this isn't just about heterosexual relationships. If you're in a same-sex relationship, because every single woman's menopause is unique to them, no two women have the same experience, then it is the same. So your partner may have had the easiest menopause, you know, they may have had slightly itchy skin, and that was it. That was the enormity of their menopause. Whereas you can be having, you know, a terrible time of it and have 25 to 30 symptoms. You can barely get up in the morning. It's the same. Their understanding of menopause is utterly different to yours. So again, it is about educating the other person and saying, this is what it is for me and I need your help. And for children, and I know I just kind of glossed over that point, but with children, it's really important that you have the conversation with your children about what's going on. Children are innocent bystanders, and they need to understand what's going on. So there is an assumption, as there is around everything to do with menopause, that you are suffering from an empty nest syndrome and that your children are older and they are leaving home. And it's really tough that now, you know, you've no longer got your babies with you, or your babies are no longer babies, essentially.
Yeah.
And that you're dealing with their hormonal changes and your hormonal changes. And if that's the case, my goodness, that is tough, because you know, you've got a clash of the hormonal titans in the room every day. You know, cue the door slamming, shouting, tears. So if you've got all of that going on, it's a pretty, you know, fiery place to be. But again, as the adult in the room, you are the one that has to say, look, this is what's going on for me. And as much as the hormones are causing problems for you on the way in, they are causing a lot of problems for me on the way out. And they can feel, at a time when they need some stability, you're far from stable. They can feel lost, as though they've been abandoned by the person that they expected to be there. And that's you know, whilst it's understandable, it's not fair on you. So it is about saying, you know, I'm vulnerable, I'm going through this too. You're teaching your children that, you know, parents are not these amazing individuals who never cry, who never get upset, who never have hard times. You're saying, no, actually, I'm a vulnerable individual as well. And that, as much as that is a difficult thing, it is actually a very important lesson, and one that they will take into their lives, and that when they meet women who are menopausal, they can say, oh, I know that, I've seen that, I've been there before. And whether, you know, they'll have a female partner as they grow older or not, they will definitely be interacting with women at some point. If you've got younger children, and that was me, because many women these days are having children when they're older, they are more likely to be having their menopause when their children are very young. It is about sitting down and just being gentle with them and saying, you know, mummy has something called the menopause going on, and that it's tough. It's tough, and mummy is acting, you know, in whatever way it might be. You might be shouty, you might be full of tears, you might be withdrawn, whatever it might be. And say, you know, I'm really sorry, this is not about me, this is something that's happening to me. And I know that I used something, and I talk with women about this, is about creating a menopause monster, because it disassociates your behaviour from you as mummy. and that when the menopause passes, the monster will disappear. And if you're doing this, you have to call it out. You have to ask your children to call it out. So there is the menopause monster. It's coming up. And my God, when it comes up, it does. Yeah. But, you know, there it is. And the minute they call it out, you have to respond. You have to go, oh, my gosh, aren't you clever? You can see it. Yes, it is. And take control of yourself. Leave the room. Do whatever it needs to be done. But it is that point of giving them the power, because they're powerless in this. So it's an incredibly bonding experience between the two of you. Mm-hmm. And it is tough that at a time when you feel least able to have these conversations, that it is up to you to have them. But on a personal front, it is up to you to have them. You are the adult in the room. If you value your relationships, it is something that you need to do. And you will benefit hugely from having the courage to do that.
Definitely. I mean, I don't want to equate menopause to an illness, but if you were going through anything else, you would be having those conversations. And so it should be sort of applied in the exact same way, really. If you're going through something and something's changing, you'd instantly reach out for the support and the understanding from the people around you. So if you're okay to talk about it, given your own sort of personal experience, were there any coping mechanisms or actions that you created with the people around you that helped?
I took more minerals and vitamins than I think I've ever taken in my life. And I would also say that for the majority of them, they made absolutely no impact whatsoever. There are some basic things that women should take. They should take a good multivitamin. They should take vitamin D for their bones. They should take an omega-3 for it keeps a level of lubrication in your system, which your estrogen does. And when you take that, when that starts to deplete, it helps with that. Probably some good vitamin B's as well. They will help with all sorts of things. And that's where I probably would end it. But as with all vitamins, you should always get advice from an expert. Yeah. And also, if you wish to pursue that, then go and see a nutritionist or a herbalist.
Yeah.
It's something that you can't cope with on your own. It is so difficult to do it on a year-by-year basis. I talked endlessly to everybody I knew who loved me, who was my friend. I needed to talk about it. I needed to say what was going on for me, if nothing else, to explain why it is that I was different or unusual or finding it tough to come out. I think that's one of the biggest coping mechanisms that I had. I know that for many women, it's also about mindfulness, it's about exercise, it is a time very much to start thinking about your well-being, and that's all tied up in valuing yourself, saying who you are, who you're going to be. And if you start looking at what you eat, the exercise that you do, and your emotional well-being, you will benefit from that hugely when you get to the other side of this transition into the second phase of your life.
I mean, we've sort of gone through like the personal relationships, but I'm interested to hear what you think about how this would work professionally. Because obviously work's like a completely other sphere where you have to kind of put your front on and be the professional self. So you mentioned some interesting statistics actually in the book. So in 20 years, there've been a 17% increase in the number of women in the workforce aged between 50 and 64, compared to a 12.2% increase of men of the same age. And this level of gender balancing is only set to rise. So more women are in the workforce, and in turn, more of us are in positions of seniority. So thinking about these numbers, how do organisations and sort of your work relationships need to change and address this? Because I think talking personally with your family and friends must be difficult, but easier than, I guess, having that conversation in a professional environment where, I guess, the stigma must just be so much more prevalent.
Yeah, it is. Oh, my gosh. So just like I said, it is your responsibility to have a conversation with your loved ones. It's a difficult one, but it is your responsibility to have a conversation at work. Now, it's likely by the time your menopause comes around that you've spent a good couple of decades building your professional persona, building your reputation, building who you are, your standing in your field, in your organization, in whatever, wherever, whichever way it might be. Even if, you know, you're running your own business, you've worked hard at it. And people, it takes years to build that positively, yet it takes a very short time indeed to destroy that with a negative opinion. And women who are turning up and suddenly not being able to, if you have to speak publicly a lot, things like loss of verbal recall, short-term memory loss, which is incredibly common. I know I suffered from it. It can be like you stand up in front of people and you start to speak and suddenly you can't remember A, what you were going to say, or even the subject matter that you were going to talk about. Women tend to withdraw into themselves, whereas before they may not have felt very confident. Sorry, as before they would have felt very confident about standing up in front of people. They would have, you know, been the first one to make a comment in a meeting. They would have been the one out there having something to say. Then suddenly they're withdrawn and they don't want to talk in front of people. And that's very difficult if that's a key part of your job. Mm-hmm. And your reputation can be damaged very, very quickly indeed. So it's important that if you can see that happening, that you take action. Because what happens at that point is rumour. And rumour is absolutely awful. You know, it has very little standing in reality and it has very little fact-based information, but people are filling it up with assumptions so they can see, you know, what you were, they can see where you are now, and they're filling the bit in between with all sorts of stuff. So it is about saying, okay, right, for my reputation, for my career, for my future career, for my salary, for my pension, for all of those things and everything that's tied up in that, I need to talk to somebody about this. Mm-hmm. And it is about saying, you know, I'm going to be the adult in the room. I am going to be the one that brings this conversation to the fore. Because unless you've got somebody in front of you who's had a bad menopause as well, or who has been trained, it will be a very it will be an uncomfortable conversation for many, because you're the only one who knows what you're talking about, essentially. So it's something that you need to do your homework for. You need to understand whether the organisation has a menopause policy or it has menopause guidelines, if there are adjustments that they make for people, for women who are in this phase of life, or if you know of any other women who've had a menopause whilst at work. So it will take a bit of thought, a bit of planning, and understanding what your symptoms are, how they show up. They're very similar processes. and how they make you react, and having a conversation and saying, you know, this is what's going on for me. You know, my career is very important to me, and I wish to stay in this environment, and I wish my career to continue. And to ask your organisation to provide support for you as you go through this. And the Equality Act, whilst it doesn't have menopause as a stipulated condition, it does have age, sex and disability, and menopause kind of sits underneath those. Mm-hmm. You are entitled to ask for reasonable adjustments. And so it is about going in there, being your professional self, being an adult, saying what's going on and what it is that you need. And as far as organisations are concerned, it's very much about recognising that women are absolutely in the workplace, and there is no longer a situation where they can make menopause something that is not to be discussed openly. They can no longer ignore it, because there's far too many women in the workplace. Mm. And there are women in senior positions, as you said. And those women are absolutely demanding that they are taken care of and looked after, and their career is, that, you know, the doors on their career are left open so that they can continue with that whilst they go through this phase of their life. And organisations need to think about retaining their staff and attracting staff as well, for that matter. And it's about saying what the adjustments are that they can offer, and educating their wider staff as to what the menopause is. And I think that that's hugely critical. If you're the only one who knows what menopause is because you're going through it, and a few other women who are going through it at the same time, then it's never going to be an empathetic conversation or organisation. So it is about education for all staff about what the menopause is, how it affects women, and what needs to be offered to women in order to assist them and to keep their career going. And that's right from the post room up to the boardroom. And it's not something that is just for a certain group of people. It's not something that's just for women. It's for everybody. I think one of the other things that I think is really important is recognising that the on-site wellbeing teams that large corporates have need to have coaches, counsellors, gynaecologists who can actually assist women. And if they don't have that, where they have corporate medical policies for their managerial staff, then they absolutely should be offering menopause support through that. And that is not done today. And that is terrible that is not being offered in this day and age, because women spend hours going to GPs, waiting on waiting lists to see specialist consultants, or it costs them a fortune, essentially, to do it. So it's something that should be out there and available to staff. And it is very much about retention, retaining the staff that they have, the staff with skills and experience within each of the organisations, because women at this age, just as they're hitting their menopause, are at the peak of their ability. They're at the peak of their experience, just as men are at this age. So it's not, so the loss to the organisation is quite considerable, and these costs are rarely discussed, but they are something to consider when thinking about the cost of providing adjustments for women.
Definitely. I mean, we've sort of talked about, we've talked about a lot, but we've talked about kind of how the severity of symptoms and how we haven't been speaking about it, the difficulty of relationships and having those conversations personally and at work. But I just want to actually finish with a more of a positive note, because actually the book is incredibly positive, and it has this running through it. And actually the whole point is, and especially at the end, is around the new you and the second phase. Like, this is the second phase, and realizing how much potential there is in that. And you've mentioned it before, but you've talked in the past about kind of menopausal women are often depicted as this frumpy 70-year-old let go. We've had conversations about this as well, especially in the media. But you actually put a really good point across that this just really isn't the case. So how would you like menopausal women to change that mindset and view the second phase of their life in the way that you do as well?
For me, your menopause is a transition into your second phase of your womanhood. Mm-hmm. And what you are doing during your menopause is you're borrowing from your future self what you're going to be like. Now, women lose sight of who they are and who they might be. And the whole point of the book is about understanding that this is an incredible opportunity that only women are afforded. It's a beginning. And because it's a beginning, you get to define exactly what's going to happen. So you're writing your own story. You're saying what it is that you want this second phase of your womanhood to be like, who you're going to be, where you're going to be, what you're going to be doing, and who you're going to be doing it with. This is an incredible opportunity, because as your hormones subside, you will think differently about it. You will be more focused on you. Instead of being focused on your estrogen is about your mothering hormone, and it's the one that puts you at the back of the queue. It's the one that makes you say, you know, it's more important that my children are okay or my partner. Whether you like that or not, it's evolutionary and it persists. It's part of us. And whether you had children or not, it's still part of you. Mm. And when that goes, you elbow yourself to the front of the queue and you say, absolutely not, I am the most important thing here. And with that, all your ambitions, all of the things that you hold dear, all of the things that are important to you, all the things that you hope and want to achieve. Mm-hmm. And if I said to any woman, what is it that you want out of your life? What are the things that you want to be doing? What are the things that would make you jump out of bed in the morning? What environment would you like to be in? You know, who are the people that you would like to surround yourself in order to achieve that? That would be like the most, that is always the most amazing conversation. Because once you get started on that, you can feel the energy out of women going, wow, yeah, this is what I want. This is absolutely where I want to be. And you're building bridges. You're building a bridge onto that place so that you can draw from that to get you through this phase. It seems unfair that nature has decided that this is the way we have to do it, but that is it, you know. As you transition, you are borrowing from your future. And that image of what is out there and what you are going to be is phenomenal. And it is about concentrating on that, identifying that, and knowing it's coming. And that is, wow. That's an opportunity. And even whatever age you are, if you think about that, how great would that be?
I mean, I'm smiling thinking about it. So, okay, I could talk to you all day. I do want to ask you where people can find you and the work you're doing, though. Any like websites or social media handles?
Yeah, so my website is Second Phase, that's all letters, secondphase.co.uk, and my social media is at Second Phase, so that's numeric, so at Second Phase, and that's on Twitter, and that's on Facebook, and you can find me on LinkedIn. and I may actually get into Instagram at some point, but not quite yet.
Something for the future.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Kate. I mean, the book has really opened my eyes, actually, to something, as you said, we haven't been having conversations about and I haven't known anything about. And I really can't recommend it enough. It's really interactive. It has such a positive message, as well as being, it's very entertaining, but also I learned so much without realising what I was learning, which is always a great thing. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for asking me. It's been a pleasure. So thank you very much indeed.
Brilliant. And thank you everyone for listening as well. So don't forget, keep an eye on our social media at Lid Publishing on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. We'll give you more information about books, experts' opinions and more podcasts with experts like Kate Usher. So we'll see you next time on Lid Radio Podcast.